I call this meeting of House Finance to order. Let the record reflect that it's 1:32 p.m. on Thursday, February 23, 2023. Present today with us is Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Representative Colom, Representative Ortiz, Representative Kronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Co-Chair Edgman, and myself, Co-Chair Johnson. And let's see, we have with us today our LIO moderator, Emma Turner, and our Finance Secretary, Leah Frazier. And we will be receiving two budget overviews today. So first will be from the Department of Revenue, presented by Commissioner Designee Adam Crum, and a second overview from the Department of Corrections, presented by Commissioner Designee Jennifer Winkleman. Commissioner Designee Crum, will you please come forward, put yourself on the record, and introduce any additional presenters you may have?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Adam Crum, Commissioner Designee for the Department of Revenue. Thank you for having us here today to talk about the budget that we put forward in the FY24 for Governor's Amend. So we'll go over the overview, the introduction, talk about the department priorities, year-over-year comparisons, as well as talk about the corporations and the authorities that are under our purview. So if we jump to slide three, the mission of the Department of Revenue is to collect, distribute, and invest funds for public purposes. We have our four values upon which we try to do everything, which is our integrity, stewardship, professionalism, and empowerment as we work with all Alaskans across the board through the Child Support Enforcement Division, the Permanent Fund Dividend Application, Division of Tax, and the Division of Treasury. And so with that, we also have the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, and the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority are corporations and authorities which sit underneath Department of Revenue. We do have representatives from each of them either on the phone or in the room in order to address those items specifically if topics come up when we get to those slides. So as we a quick overview of just some department priorities that we have put forward, last year the legislature helped fund a position for a chief risk officer. And it was the idea was to build a holistic enterprise risk management framework for the department, along with items on cybersecurity, to make sure that we are taking care of, from an overall department standpoint, protecting Alaskans' data most effectively, as well as identifying key man risk and other areas upon which we can improve. We've also put forward effort in the Permanent Fund Dividend Division on cybersecurity measures. The legislature put forward some funding last year on that, and we were able to implement items like multi-factor authentication, or MFA, as well as My Alaska account tracing and matching. And another aspect that we're going to be working on through the next fiscal year is economic development policy. Working across the board with the boards upon which the commissioner's office sits, which is ADA, Alaska Housing Finance, and the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, and working across the executive branch with different groups on economic priorities and development areas on how we can kind of bring to bear aspects to really diversify Alaska's economy and find ways to get more individuals up here across the board. So as we move on to the budget numbers, I'm going to pass this off to the Admin Services Director for the Department of Revenue, Eric DeMolin.
Thank you, Commissioner. Madam Chair, thank you for having us in front of the committee. I just wanted to preface that we're first going to go over some visual budget overview slides. There are some outliers that you will see. We will address these in each individual components as we go through the presentation. So with that, the first slide that we have on slide five is just a statewide UGF budget comparison across each of the different state departments. I believe most of you have already seen this. This is also presented within Ledge Finance. And as you can see, DOR, we just highlighted our portion of UGF relative to statewide. Moving on to slide six, you can see our total fund budget by fund grouping. So just visually, you can see the majority of the funding for the Department of Revenue falls in the other category. The second highest is Fed, and that is our Child Support Enforcement Division. with UGF and DGF making up about 7% of our total budget authority. On the right-hand side of this visualization, you just see our FY22 actuals relative to our FY23 management plan and what we're putting forward for this year's FY24 governor's amended budget. With that, I just wanted to pause and see if anybody has any questions as far.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, through the chair to the folks at Department of Revenue. Just curious, probably know the answer. The drop-off in Fed funding, COVID-related, would be my guess. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, that is correct.
Thanks.
Moving on to slide 7, this is just a visual representation of the delta of our fund year over year by fund source grouping. So as we look at this in each quadrant, you see the blue column or the blue sections represent the baseline budget, and the red bars that are associated represent the change to that budget year over year. I did mention on this one, you can really see the outliers referencing with the permanent fund, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and we will address that as we get through the presentation. All right, so just to recap, increases from our FY23 management plan, majority of them sit within just the salary adjustments and COLA adjustments to the baseline budget. We do have a couple of items of note that we were going to highlight. We will revisit these in future slides. So, one of them being our TRIMS, our tax management reporting system and collection software. We're moving that system to the cloud, gives us some enhanced security measures, and we're looking for an increment for ongoing expenses in relation to that project. PFD, the dividend application information system, has undergone upgrades over the past few years, and we're going to have some ongoing costs in terms of just upkeep management of that system in itself in relation to IT costs. And then the other item that you're going to see is just restoring higher education funding, and you see that fund change to higher ed from our from general fund bucket. A couple of decreases that we're seeing are technical decreases related to COVID, as we already mentioned, and the other one is reducing one-time increments that we received in last year's budget. Moving on to slide 9, we're going to get into each one of the individual divisions within the Department of Revenue. The first item that we have is the tax division. Mentioned just previously, we have the tax revenue management system, a cloud migration project that is currently underway. We're looking for an additional $373,000 to support that initiative moving forward. Working with the contractor, that is the increase in cost, less costs that we're going to be saving from moving off of the Office of Information Technology's off-premises mainframes. We're also looking to do a move or a reduction in UGF, specifically within tax, to move the budget authority to our criminal investigation unit. When we get to the CIU component slide in itself, I think that'll come full circle, make some more sense. We're just realigning our budget authority within the department to be more transparent. The last item that we have for tax of note is just the salary increases relative to the COLA adjustments within the budget. Okay. On slide 10, moving over to the Treasury Division, highlighting the technical item of restoring the higher education fund and reducing the UGF component that funds it currently. Restoring cash management for $685,000. This falls into the other category. We're looking to restore that was cut last year, and that is funded through interagency receipt authority. And the last item of note here is the salary adjustments. Again, these are the salary COLA adjustments to the baseline. Okay. Next up, we have the permanent fund division on slide 11. This is one of the items that we had the one-time increment funding last year in relation to dividend application and security objectives that we had. This was appropriated to us originally to help fund some sort of ID validation third-party service. As we work through this year, we've had a couple of really big successes when it comes to PFD security. Not all of it was actually necessary for this year, and we'll go into that in a little bit more detail. But the $2 million in itself, we restricted and are looking to lapse, for lack of better terms, about $1.5 million, achieving the same objective. So we didn't need all the money that was previously appropriated. The second item that we have for the PFD division is the DAIS, or the Dividend Application Information System. This is the increment we're looking for ongoing support after the system upgrades that are taking place currently. We see the transfer to the criminal investigation units within PFD as well. So we're moving funding that's classified as other for $469,000, and that'll be transferred within the commissioner's office and admin services component to fund CIU directly. The last item that we have of note are the salary adjustments for PFD. Okay. Next on slide 12 is the Child Support Enforcement Division. Nothing sticking out of note from year over year for Child Support Enforcement. We are changing the name. Previously, Child Support Enforcement was the Child Support Services Division. That's a technical change that aligns with the federal overarching agency. The feds are referred to as Child Support Enforcement. And this just aligns us more with that naming convention and also gets rid of some of the confusion in relation to the Office of Children's Services over at Health. Okay. Next, we do have our department overview for Criminal Investigations Unit, and this is a component of Admin Services and the Commissioner's Office. So we're seeing where the funding sources we saw in prior slides, both with tax and PFD, are then being moved to this component. Currently, CIU is funded through Interagency Receipt Authority, and that gets billed out directly to tax and to PFD, where we're transferring the money from. And that's to a one-to-one ratio based off of those positions being centralized 2 years ago. This allows us to have just transparency within our budget. It's not this bill back within the department itself. It shows where the expenditures are being incurred. And it also aligns what CIU does and keeps at arm's length the investigators from PFD and tax. So the idea that they're independent and they're independent investigators is important. Only other item of note there is the salary adjustments in the base budget.
Are you complete? Does this slide complete? Okay, Representative Hand, I do appreciate it because oftentimes I don't see people, and so I appreciate you pointing it out. But I do see Representative Hand.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Mr. DeMolin. Thank you. The Criminal Investigations Unit, and it looks like it's about twice as much money that we're not quite twice, but more that's coming out of tax division into this new, and I guess I'm so can you describe for me what our criminal investigations and tax division are usually around? Because I would think that that's less criminal and more accountant speak. I understand criminal investigations with regard to PFD fraud. But I'm just trying to understand it, whether we have that much fraud going on in our tax division versus arguments about what those taxes should be, which were not necessarily fraud, but from the budgetary allocation, it looks like we have a high amount of fraud in our taxes being pursued.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Hannah. This isn't a proportional representation of either fraud or activities being conducted by the Criminal Investigations Unit. So 2 years ago, these positions actually existed in the tax division, right? So when we moved those positions over, it was just funding of the personal services on a one-to-one basis. We keep track of the Criminal Investigations Unit and what they're working on. They give weekly updates on caseloads, what they're working on, and it is not a proportional representation. More or less, this is just realigning the budget based off of those PCNs moving over. The time they actually spent is, to your point, actually more time is spent, especially now, on PFD cases versus fraud that we're finding within tax. So want to make sure that that's clear.
Okay, thank you. That clarifies.
Thank you.
Now we're getting into our authorities and to the corporations, and as Commissioner Crum mentioned, any detailed questions, we do have representatives either online or in the room. So first up, we have the Mental Health Trust Authority and the Long-Term Care Ombudsman's Office. It's just one thing we like to point out to the committees each and every year is that the Mental Health Trust budget begins at zero each and every year versus a baseline model that we work with our operating budget. And proposals are dispersed across the agency in both the operating and capital banks. But wanted to see if anybody has any questions specific to the trust authority.
Representative Colom, followed by Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair. So this UGF, the 539, is that the cost? I assume, so I was at the meeting before this. So it sounded like the 49 or the 5105 is the mental health trust operations that come from the mental health authority itself, right? What's the 539 and what is it about? Is that the ombudsman?
Through the chair, Representative Colom. So the 532,000 is within the ombudsman's office. So there's two different components within the mental health trust authority. And the UGF that we've seen been added over the years is usually a function of some of the central rate chargebacks that we see that are allocated towards their budget. And we've seen that come in UGF waivers over time. So, yeah.
Can I have a follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
So I'm new. Bring it down a little bit. So I'm trying to find out what the connection between the mental health trust and ombudsman and what, like, I don't understand the connection.
Commissioner Designee Crum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do believe we have the long-term care ombudsman online, as well as if Steve Williams, the CEO of the Mental Health Trust, was here. I don't know if he's if he left or if he's available online.
Are you online? The long-term, is it the long-term care ombudsman's office or is anyone online?
So Madam Chair, if I may, sorry, Paul, did they, the authorities under us and the agencies like to speak on their own items, which I offer that opportunity. But yes, the primary and the UGF side on that is for the long-term care ombudsman's office. But as far as the connection as why is the components put together with the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, we like to get that back to you in writing so I don't misspeak on that topic.
That sounds good. Thank you.
Or do we have anyone from the Mental Health Trust online or available? Thank you. Thank you. Maybe when they maybe they'll come back. Maybe they'll come back on.
So moving on to slide 15, we have the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. So a few items that were put forward this year was a $3 million increment on federal authority for the Housing Choice Voucher Program, another $1.3 million in new multifamily and conventional loan rent programs, and the other only other item of note are just the salary adjustments that we're seeing year over year. Wanted to pause here and see if anybody had any specific questions.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I'd just like to, a quick question going back a couple of slides with regard to the criminal investigation unit. I wondered if this is the same unit that also investigates gaming violations, pull tabs, illegal gambling, et cetera. Just curious, trying to put that picture together in my head.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin, yes, it is.
All right, thank you.
All right, and then moving on to slide 17, we have the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. So items that were put forward this year, so we've got the first bullet here is incentive compensation for $1.2 million. They did put forward as well an increment for consulting and IT improvements for just over $250,000. This year falls under their triennial workplace replacement schedule. So we're looking for an additional $240,000 to fund that initiative. We're seeing an increase in board honorarium for FY24 with increased meetings and travels this year. And then we're seeing just the salary increments within APFC as well for another $116,000.
Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to the folks at the Department of Revenue. I'm just curious, do we incorporate operating a permanent fund corporation like as a net between the actual earnings of the fund? So when we actually look at the performance of the fund, of the permanent fund, do we offset the actual cost of administering the folks at the permanent fund corporation in the calculation or no?
Madam Chair, for the record, this is Commissioner Crum. I'd like to offer the permanent fund folks, Chief Financial Officer Valerie Birdsich, who's going to be online.
Valerie Mertz, Chief Financial Officer for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Through the chair, the operating expenses of the corporation are reflected in the financial statements that we publish every month for the fund. The management fee component is reflected in the total fund performance that is reported by Callan. The other operating expenses are not reflected in those performance numbers, but the expenses are included in the financials that we published.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
So on the next slide is just APFC's corporation continued. It's our investment management fees. It's represented in a different component just budgetarily, so we just highlight it here. I'll pause if there's any other questions for APFC. All right. And the last slide that we have is just speaking to our FY23 supplemental asks. When we spoke about the tax division, we already made reference to the tax management reporting systems and the cloud migration. We're actively working on this project and anticipate this being complete next month. The $186,800 that we're putting forward in terms of supplemental funding will basically fund net what we're saving from OIT for cloud services for the remainder of this year. AHFC has a supplemental for their salary adjustments to match HB 226. When that went last year, it referenced the statute did not explicitly cover AHFC. Just as practice, they try to follow the legislative body's action when it comes to exempt employees. So they're looking for that 5% increase to follow suit with what was already approved last year. Last item that we have is just a technical budget item for the Alaska Housing Finance Corp for federal stimulus and housing lapsing appropriation to be extended in FY24. It's an existing multi-year appropriation within the budget.
Question from Representative Ortiz, followed by Representative Galvin.
Madam Chair, so we're at the end of the presentation, correct? Okay, so if we could we go back to page 5 of the presentation? Commissioner Designee Crum, on this particular slide, it shows the expenditure for the proposed expenditure for this year's PFD, just under $2.4 billion. Do you see that as a sustainable figure that we can go on into the future and keep distributing the fund in that manner and under the original statute?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the nice thing is in my role, my job is to make sure we administer the program. So as appropriated out, the permanent fund dividend division will make sure that eligibility and the integrity of the program is there. When you look at how this matches, as long as we don't exceed the 5% POMV draw from the permanent fund corpus as a trustee, that is the sustainability of the fund.
Follow up. Okay, so then can we look at this particular slide then and say that this is a reflection of this budget plan reflects the priorities in terms of the administration's priorities in terms of where we should be using our POMB draw resources. In other words, I see a reduction for education, but a significant increase to the PFD. That's what we're saying, that's the priorities of the governor, then. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I can't speak to that, sir. That'd be a question for the gov's office or for OMB.
Thank you. No further questions.
All right. Thank you, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Through the chair, Commissioner, I heard a little bit in the previous meeting with regard to the incentive compensation. We're looking at $1.2 million for investment staff for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Is that correct? And is that UGF? I just want to clarify where that's coming from.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin. No, this would not be UGF. This is the 1105 Permanent Fund Corporation receipts, which is comes from the earnings aspect.
Thank you.
And any funds not used from that from the 1105 are actually kept in the earnings reserve and still invested.
Perfect. That I just wanted that clarification. And it is the second year of utilizing this system. Yes?
Yeah, through the chair, yes.
Okay, sorry. Follow-up, please, if I may. And I think I heard earlier that you're making an attempt to be competitive with other states with the, making sure we have the best of the best in our investment staff. And I just wondered if you had any first impressions. I know that they can make up to $150,000 as a bonus. And so I just would love to know if it's working and you have a good sense that people want to stay on board.
Through the chair to Representative Galvin. So speaking as a trustee of the Permanent Fund Corporation, I was able to vote on this incentive comp policy in December. Mm-hmm. It was a revised plan tied directly to the performance against benchmarks. So each individual asset class has a benchmark upon which the board sets that we measure the performance. And so if they do beat the benchmark in that asset class, then there is areas where they can receive this incentive compensation. It's a purely quantitative number, an objective across the board. And this is in a long term, prior to my time sitting on the Permanent Fund Corporation trustee board, been investigated against and looking at different peer groups on how that is done to recruit staff. Thus far, it is in a healthy position, and there are direct staff of the Permanent Fund Corp who can speak more on the overall recruitment retention, if that would help. I do believe the HR manager is in the room.
Through the chair, I think I have a fair understanding. It's a little too soon probably to get clear numbers. I just wanted to have a sense, which I have, which is wonderful. Thank you very much.
Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, so if we look at page 5 again and we're talking about the permanent fund, wouldn't the governor's budget reflect following the statute of a full permanent fund dividend?
Through the chair, Representative Kronk, that is my understanding of the number that was put forward. That it's following the statutory formula. Thank you.
Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair of the Department of Revenue, probably Commissioner Designee Crum. I am just curious. So by my easy math, we spend about $217 million administering the Permanent Fund Corporation a year. That's basically the operating costs plus the folks we pay our investment managers. What is the cost of administering all the other funds that are outside of the fund, say like the ARM board, PC fund, etc.?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, on page 10 has the cost of the Treasury Division, which administers the Jafonzi funds, type 1 and 2, as well as PCE, the Alaska Higher Education Fund, and a number of other statutory-based funds. And you can see that we're putting forward for FY24 and GovAmend is a total budget of $11,728,000. There are some other aspects tied there. I do have my Treasury Division Director in here if she wants to speak about ARM board costs as well.
Would you like to?
Yeah, real quickly, if you could, Madam Chair.
Go ahead and bring your director forward.
Good afternoon. This is Pam Leary, the director of the Treasury Division. The ARM board has separate budget components, and they have, I think it's around 10.3 million that supports the ARM board's operating costs. And part of that amount supports the Treasury staff component that's in this particular budget. So all told is about, I think it's close to $7 million that supports the Treasury component. So with quick math, it's about 14 to 15 million total.
Thanks.
Seeing no additional questions, and since we do have another, we do have one other department that's presenting. I have a quick question. I'd like to make it the last question because it might, if we might, but because it's a, I don't want to get into a long discussion of it, but it's on page four of the, I just would like to get your short, your short description on your last bullet point there, economic development and policy. Would you just talk about how you plan to implement that and who you might work with on that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Commissioner Designee Crum. So economic development is a massive priority for Governor Dunleavy. And so he's instructed across the executive branch for us to work together. We do have an economic subcabinet, which is led by Commissioner Sandy at the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. We meet on a weekly basis with the other investment corporations around the state, as well as other agencies, about the projects that are being worked on. How do we actually make sure we're coordinating across the board for use with infrastructure funds, that we're doing proper outreach with communities? And so this is an ongoing aspect, and so this is something that we're using the Department of Revenue side for as well, as we put together initial plans on how can we better serve Alaskans across the board, as well as municipalities, to help them at a local level when it comes to economic development. So these are items which were ongoing. We're helping to put together some policies on this so we can actually do a formal outreach to different groups on other items that are creative we've seen success with around the country. When you look at Colorado Springs and Denver, possibly tax incentive financing, what are the limitations we have? Do we need statutory authority to do that? And so we're reviewing items from that standpoint to bring forward what are all the tools we can use in Alaska to make sure we've got multiple concurrent paths happening at the same time.
Very good. Well, thank you. I appreciate you presenting before House Finance today. And is there anything else you'd like to add before we bring up your other department?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, well, very good. Appreciate having you. And we'll just take a brief at ease while we before we move to the next department.
But remember, Treasury, we
held. I bring this meeting back to order. And we will be hearing next from the Department of Corrections for their FY 2024 budget overview. Let's see here. I think I'm just to make sure I get everything quite just right. I would like to invite Commissioner Designee Jennifer Winkleman forward, and I believe she has April Wilkerson and Terry West from the Department of Corrections. Go ahead and come forward, put yourself on the record, and introduce your fellow, or I guess we've kind of touched on that, and if there's anyone additional, go ahead and start your presentation.
Excellent. Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jen Winkleman, and I am the Commissioner Designee for the Department of Corrections. At the table with me, I have Deputy Commissioner April Wilkerson, and our also legislative liaison. And I also have our Administrative Services Director, Terry West. I do have directors online, lifelines online, and in the room. So, started here. So on slide 2 is an overview of the structure of the department. I will point out that the parole board is housed budgetarily within the Department of Corrections, but it is fully autonomous, and the staff in that unit point to the members of the parole board, which are appointed. One little fun fact about our executive team within this organizational chart, we have nearly 150 years of corrections experience. So kind of a fun fact about our team. So the Department of Corrections was originally housed as a division under the Division of Corrections under the Department of Health and Social Services. And in 1984, under an executive order, it branched out to become its own department. Our mission is grounded in the Alaska Constitution, and that is to provide secure confinement, programming, and a process of supervised release. We have 4 divisions within the department. Those are noted on the chart below, and it shows where each division hits those core services within our mission. So Alaska is one of 7 states that operates a unified correctional system. And the best way to describe that is that our prisons and jails fall under one umbrella. And being that we are one of 7, sometimes that does provide its own unique challenges. I would also note that the department booked in nearly 30,000 offenders into its facility in FY22. And where the slide bullet point of the 16,000 that were unique offenders is a really unique number to share with you is that what that shows is that folks were booked in more than once.
If you would just describe for people the difference between a prison and jail. I think I heard it for years before I figured out what it was.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. So the difference between a prison and a jail, best way I can describe it is that oftentimes the jails, they're housed within boroughs, cities, and folks are brought in it's the unsentenced population that stays in those primarily, and then the sentenced population will go off into a prison once they've been convicted. Probably a little more complicated than that in the dictionary, if you will, but that is the best description I can do.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Commissioner, nice to see you. The 660 non-criminal Title 47 bookings, are those, if they're non-criminal, they're not waiting to be made competent. That's what my head says. They're possibly going into involuntary commitment?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, great question. I could get more of a breakdown for you on the 660. What I can best describe as these are Title 47, very often the 24-hour holds for intoxication, and then there are going to be some that will then move to be held somewhere else for a commitment into a hospital.
Thank you. Yes, I would love that breakdown through the chair.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear exactly what we were asking for. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, to Representative John Josephson, we will get the breakdown for him of what those Title 47s are.
Okay. And that would be routed through you, Madam Chair.
Oh, yeah, I didn't hear what the request was. Thank you.
Then the only other part of this slide that I would note is that the Department of Corrections is responsible for approximately 11,000 individuals. So we're going to have those that are within our jails and prisons. We're also going to have those that are out on sentenced electronic monitoring. You're going to have folks that are at the halfway house, and you're going to also have those that are on supervision, both in pretrial status as well as probation and parole. And now I will turn the budget part over specifically to our Administrative Services Director, Terry West.
For the record, this is Terry West, Director of Admin Services for the Department of Corrections. The next few slides are kind of a high-level overview of the department's 24 operating budget request. So in slide 5, we show a historical look back comparing FY24 government to FY22 actuals and the FY23 management plan. The FY23 management plan includes a supplemental of about $21.3 million, of which about $17.4 million is related directly to the shortfall within the institutions. The reduction you see in the designated general funds is related to a fund source change of recidivism reduction funds to general funds. And then the other change you see is a federal fund source change related to the coronavirus relief funds. Excuse me. Slide 6 shows the 24 operating budget requests by fund source. The majority of the department's funds comes directly from the undesignated general funds, followed by other federal and then the designated general funds. Slide 7 shows that same 24 operating budget request by line item. Our budget is primarily funding personal services and service-related expenditures, followed by commodities, travel, and then some capital outlay. On slide 8, we show the FY24 budget broken out by our divisions. The majority of our budget supports the institutions, followed by health and rehabilitation services, pretrial probation and parole, administration and support, and then the parole board. So earlier today, we had identified an error in slide 9, so I'm hoping everybody has received that correction. The numbers were correct, however, the bars didn't represent the numbers that were shown. So this is a 10-year history look back at our budgets. FY14 through FY22 are based on actuals. And then the FY23, of course, is our management plan plus the supplemental request. And then FY24 is our current governor amendment.
Chair. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, I think for the commissioner designee, while I wasn't a supporter of the bill, I note here that we were looking at FY17. It was 2 months ahead of us when we were looking at SB 91, and it's just interesting to see the concept behind. One of the concepts was to reduce this budget. And we made a decision not to do that ultimately, and so we're where we are. Is that a fair statement?
So through the chair to Representative Josephson, I think between SB 91, then HB 49, then COVID, I think there's just a myriad of different reasons. Because that certainly has driven up our overtime in our supplemental. COVID had certainly driven up our overtime and staffing levels now. So I think it's a combination of everything.
Okay. It's just interesting to look at. Thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Ms. Winkleman, and I serve on the subcommittee, and I don't know why I hadn't asked this question there, but between FY23 and 24, we're seeing a decrease of $9 million. So what is it we're expecting that's going to save us $9 million? Because we're not seeing our population go down of we're not expecting the decrease of people we are housing in institutions.
For the record, this is April Wilkerson, Deputy Commissioner for Corrections. Through the chair to Representative Hannon, there's a couple factors that played into the difference between FY23 and 24, and those are primarily related to the one-time items. We've had some pretty catastrophic failures in various facilities we've had that aren't really capital thresholds, but they could be. So currently we're replacing a radio system out at Goose Creek. We've had some CCTV, our camera issues. So we do see in the FY23, right now we see some expenditures that we consider one-time items. And then we are hopeful, with our fingers crossed, some of the economic issues that we're seeing nationwide, we're hoping that some of those will settle down and start to come back down going into FY24. So we're hoping that it's not a $9 million difference by the time we get into FY24.
Thank you.
So slide 10 also shows our FY24 government budget by division. This time we've included, we've identified the services and programs that are supported by the funding for those divisions. A couple things to note here are that the Office of the Commissioner falls under the Division of Administration and Support, as well as the Offender DNA Program Oversight and Tracking. The next few slides are major operating budget changes.
If I might go back to slide 9, just I understand this is a revised slide 9.
Slide 9 was the corrected slide, yes.
Would you? I was just wondering what the difference between the two were.
To the chair, the changes were, the numbers were the correct for each year within that chart. However, the bars didn't reflect the change appropriately moving from year to year. For instance, the original slide had FY23 as shown in the corrected slide, but 24 looked higher or taller than the FY23 bar. Does that make sense?
I see. Yes. Thank you.
So in slide 11, the first bullet shows an increment to cover increases in salaries and health insurance. We've also included the fund allocation by fund source for this particular change. We also have a fund transfer moving authority from Health and Rehabilitation Services to the Division of Institutions to cover the shortfalls within those institutions. On slide 12, we have an increment request of restorative justice funds, and we are showing how it will be distributed amongst those 13 institutions. On slide 13, we are reflecting a couple fund source changes. The first is a reversal of the American Rescue Plan Act throughout various components within the department. The second is an annual allocation of restorative justice funds for the Division of Physical Health Care.
Representative Klum.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, can you go back to 11 quickly? That transfer authority from HARS to institutions, Is that a move from HARS to institutions? You're just, instead of taking it out of HARS, you take, explain where the money's coming from. What's the transfer from where to where?
Through the chair to Representative Colon. This is a transfer from HARS to the Division of Institutions. We were able to do that due to cost savings and reductions in our expenses for the Health and Rehabilitation Services Division.
Yeah, so I guess I wouldn't mind. Oh, through the chair, can I do a follow-up? Sorry.
Follow-up.
I would like to have you guys follow up maybe on the details of that. My concern is, so you're saving money in health and rehab services and going to institutions. I want the money in health and rehab. So maybe this is something system-wide that you save the money, but if we save the money there, I just urge you to spend the money in health and rehab. That's where we need to be spending the money. So that's all I have to say.
Through the chair to the representative, those efforts were through things, cost reduction efforts, such as operating an internal dialysis center within our Goose Creek Correctional Center, participation in the federal 340B pharmaceutical pricing program, reductions in the cost of the Hep C prescriptions, claims, adjudication contracts, and so forth. We can give you details later at a later date.
May I follow up?
Follow up.
Through the chair. I think that's good. That gives me an idea, and good for you guys for saving that. I'm just concerned with the savings. I would like to see it back into something in HARS instead of more money in institutions. I understand you got to move the money where you need it, but just a comment. Thank you.
So on slide 14 shows our budget request for 24 government, an increment of $250,000 within the office of the commissioner. DPS has created a non-permanent full-time investigator position to support the agreement we have with their department. The intent is to investigate inmate deaths and ensuring timely reporting of those investigations and outcomes. The intent is also to establish that cooperative effort to streamline and create efficiencies when there are potential inmate felony misdemeanant criminal activity.
So this is within, obviously, our state facilities. How many people do we have outside of Alaska at this point?
Madam Chair, I believe we have 7, but I'll get back to you on that.
Okay, thank you.
So at this point...
Can I jump in with a question, please? Relative to slide number 14, Commissioner, I want to give you an opportunity maybe to amplify this budget request, which is currently before the subcommittee, and maybe touch upon some of the points that we talked about in my office a couple of days ago, because I think this slide right here is it's a meaningful addition. I mean, it covers sort of a broad range of things within the department, and maybe just a little bit of additional clarification. I really appreciate the explanation a moment ago, but I think this would be helpful for when the subcommittee provides its report to the full committee.
Through the chair, Representative Edgeman, thank you for that opportunity. So when a crime happens within a facility, we call on the Department of Public Safety for investigating that crime. Somebody brings in drugs, if an assault happens, something like of that nature. What happens is the trooper that's available comes over to the facility and will handle it when they become available. Priority is going to be out on the street. And so this has been sort of a conversation that myself and in collaboration with the Department of Public Safety with Commissioner Cockrell said, hey, what if we assign an individual to the Department of Corrections? In the meantime, we had, an inordinate amount of deaths in 2022. And the idea was, let's get this investigator to be that point person for that misdemeanor and felony charges that happen. But in addition, let's look at the deaths that have happened and also become that point of contact, that consistent point of contact on any, knock on wood, moving forward, should they happen. That way we have an outside, as most of you have probably seen, there has been a request to get an investigator assigned to look at the Department of Corrections and look at these deaths that happened. So by having this Department of Public Safety employee allows the department to have a consistent set of eyes outside of the department to look at what is happening within the facilities and be able to work then with the Department of Law, the medical examiner, us, if there are systemic things that need to be changed or brought forward. So it really is an opportunity to have that outside investigation piece for the inmate deaths, but also for criminal activity that happens behind the walls and allows law enforcement to be out on the street handling other stuff while the one point of contact can be assigned to corrections.
Thank you.
All right. At this point, I will hand this back off to Commissioner Designee Will Winkleman.
For the record, this is Jen Winkleman. And so this final slide on number 15 was the goals and objectives, and I've had the honor of speaking with all members of the committee and sharing my vision with the department and my goal and objectives, and that is the health and well-being of staff being number one, and that it really goes down to the hiring the right people into these positions. This is a great department to work for. It's a great opportunity, a sense of purpose, and so taking care of our staff so they can take care of those we're charged with is very, very important. The second one being that those that are within our care and custody in whatever fashion, whether they're on supervision out on the street or they're within our facilities, that they leave us better than they came to us. And I realize that measuring stick can look different for everybody, but ultimately getting folks healthier on the outside. 95% of folks that come to us, that come into our custody, are going to get back out someday and be our neighbors. So how do we do this to get them healthier so that they aren't coming back, and that does drive down both the recidivism, ultimately the cost to the state. Then identifying efficiencies and resources to reduce that recidivism. What are we doing? If we keep doing the same thing, we're going to get the same results. So what can we do different as a department to drive down those costs and drive down that recidivism? And so those have been my top three goals and initiatives for the department that I have been working really hard with my staff on and, of course, been sharing with all of you. So
we have a question from Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the subject of recruitment of corrections officers in particular, they have indicated a desire for years to have something akin to what DPS does with its trooper recruitment section, where they have a real presence. I don't know if these are at job fairs. I think there's something like that. But essentially where they have the department have COs that are either back from retirement or in active service who they think can speak better to a recruit, potential recruit, about what the job really entails and that the department would benefit from that. I'm sure you're familiar with this issue. They're passionate about it. Can you give me a sense of where that stands? How much do the ACOA, or Corrections Officers Association members themselves, play a role in trying to bring in new recruits?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Josephson, that's a great question. What I will say is that even in my short tenure in this position, we established six additional non-perm positions so that we can bring in anybody retired that is willing to help with recruitment efforts. I believe we have one current retired correctional officer in the unit right now. In addition to that, we actually have, I believe, two that are working, two current correctional officers that are working in the unit right now to help with that. And I will say that, despite COVID and some of the slowdowns with job fairs and some of the events out in the communities, that we have definitely had a presence at those events. And we encourage not only the recruitment and retention unit staff and those that are working in it, but also current staff if we need assistance from correctional officers, probation officers, or admin service, we get them to that event that's tailored to that. What I would say, one anomaly has been that it has even been difficult to hire some of the retired folks and it back into these positions. But I feel like we have made headway in at least establishing additional positions and having one in there right now.
Thank you.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, slide 16, Trapper and Atlas. So where did you find all this contraband? Is it in the – and just maybe explain that a little bit.
Through the chair to Representative Tomaszewski. Thank you for that question. It is usually something I close with to note that this data is from last year, and it's a combined total of outside agency assists. With the DEA, postal inspectors, they go out when folks are on probation and parole. This is not from just inside facilities.
Okay, well, thank you. That's refreshing to know. I mean, good information.
And I think to that typically
that's a lot of contraband.
I have a question on the on your health and rehabilitative services area from the 340B pharmacy program. Do you anticipate future savings from that? And then, and how much have you, I guess, how much you've saved and so on, if you would?
To the chair, this is April Wilkerson. We're actually seeing some pricing starting to go back up. So we have seen a substantial drop in the pharmaceutical cost, but we are starting to see the trend going back up a little bit. But we'll have to get back to the committee with actual numbers that's okay.
If you would, that would be much appreciated. And then I had one other question. Last year, I believe it was last year, may have been the year before, we had a request from the department. It was a substantial request for copiers and a number of things to limit the amount of paper that was circulating in and out of the system because I believe that's how drugs were saturated paper was being used to transport drugs in and out of the system. And I remember that we did not fund that. But would you be able to speak to that at all? Have you been able to achieve, even though I know we didn't fund the copiers and so on, but it sounded like quite a issue.
To the chair, April Wilkerson again, we did get a portion of that funding and we were able to implement the inmate mail copy and deliver process in three of our facilities. We have seen a reduction. We've seen that success in that program. However, there's always an alternative. When you close one door, there's something else that comes up. We have seen an increase in the legal mail, so legal mail distribution. So we're taking action and looking at that to control the contraband coming in that fashion.
All right. Thank you. All right. Well, we have one more question, Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair. So my question is on page 13 regarding the Restorative Justice Fund. So my understanding is that this fund has shown a sharp increase because the BFDs were large last year. And so this is using this money from the UGF, you're moving it to the Justice Fund. Is that affecting the balance of the monies going to victims? Does that make sense? Like, are you taking a bigger, is this coming out of what we would normally give victims? Or is this within the percentages you normally give money?
Through the chair to Representative Cologne, this allocation and the total amount within the Department of Corrections budget is in alignment with the percentages, and it's not taking away from other allocations.
Okay.
Can I have a follow-up?
Follow-up.
So in the blue book, it was saying that it may be supplanted with general funds in subsequent years. So you're hoping that this is an increase that even though the permanent fund goes down, that the UGF will kick in and the increase will stay?
Through the chair to Representative Klom. That is correct. This is an annual adjustment that's done within the department's budget. It goes back historical. If the PFD criminal funds or the restorative justice funds go up, we do a like reduction in general funds. And then if the restorative justice funds go down, then we do an increase to maintain that stability within that budget.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, I'm ever vigilant. So I, well, thank you so much for presenting before us today. We appreciate that. I see no additional questions. Our next meeting will be Friday, February 24th, 2023. We will be getting a budget overview from the Department of Law. I have presenting Craig Taylor, Attorney General for the Department of Law. But on my other sheet, I have a presenting Corey Mills, a Deputy Attorney General, and John Skidmore, Deputy Attorney General for the Department of Law. So we shall see the Department of Law before us on Friday. And with no further business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned.